It's time for Airspeed. I'm Stephen Force. You know, the drums are all right. Nothing wrong with the theme music. And it's, you know, we've been using it for a year and a half. But, heck, we've had the podcast going for a year and a half now. We've been to Oshkosh. Hell, we shared a table with Dave Higdon. We can probably do better than that. All right, let's get the Mando. Everybody will recognize that from Potapalooza. Let's get the little guitar. I got an Asbury bass, and we can probably use that a little bit. Okay, let's give it another try. Let's try it now. Time for Airspeed. All right, that's more like it. A little bit more with the music here. That's yours truly on the guitar, the Mando, the drums from actually like a year and a half, 2 years ago, and also the Asbury bass. That's for an upcoming album project. The Asbury bass, very interesting. It is a bass that has an 18-inch scale length. The strings are actually silicone. I mean, they're like rubber band strings. If it's at all humid, you need to put cornstarch on them if you want to move your fingers around. It's fretless, and it uses piezoelectric pickups, so it is something that literally, it's smaller than most backpacker guitars, and you can walk around and, you know, take this thing on an airline or whatnot, although, you know, query whether you want to actually walk through an airport with an oblong object strung over your shoulder. I mean, the National Guard isn't stationed there anymore, but still you want to be careful. In any case, welcome to another episode of Airspeed. Good episode going on today. The pursuit of the instrument rating is continuing, and I was a little bit worried. I flew in May and then did not fly again until July, but I just picked up another 2.5 hours here in early August, and things are just cranking away. And I gotta attribute a lot of that to having flown about 3 hours of simulator, and really just nailing the approaches. I got a new instructor. His name's Steve Romer. My prior instructor has gone to fly for Masaba. He's out there in 340s now. So good for him. I hope actually to be a passenger of somebody that with whom I've trained. But Steve is a former Vietnam Air Cav, a just absolutely unflappable guy. You could forgive him for being an ass kicker, and he's just not. I mean, he'll ride you about the gauges. That's what I want at this point. But and he's, you know, he's helpful. He's good with the cockpit resource management, and flying with him is a pleasure. I want to play just a wee bit of audio here, if only because I don't know about you guys. The biggest thing for me about instrument training is the fact that I have a tough time with situational awareness. I said a long time ago in the very first episode I did about instrument flying that it's all about bandwidth packing. Your first flight, it is all you can do to keep the airplane straight and level under the hood. By about the third flight or so, you're able to pretty much do that. You begin to develop your scan. Then they want you doing, you know, constant speed, climbs, descents, and all sorts of other stuff. And, you know, eventually you work into the approaches. But it's all about bandwidth packing. We went up to Flint, as folks from Pontiac usually do when they're training for instruments. And, of course, we fly maybe a 330 to Flint. Beautiful day for that. And I'm gonna spend a little bit of time on this because it's worthwhile. The last time I went up to fly, there was probably 1,500 foot ceilings, overcast layer, and so on. And it was, visibility was kind of down. So I'm out there pre-flighting, and one of the instructors that I hadn't met before, along with a primary student, are just getting out of the plane. And he says, "Hey, man, it's, you know, it's low out there. You know, you're barely going to be able to get any pattern work in. It's just, I don't know that you want a pre-flight." So, dude, we haven't met. I understand. I'm an instrument student, and I'm probably 3-4 flights away from the check ride. His eyes light up and said, "Dude, get up there before it burns off." So that's my mentality at this point. Anyway, beautiful. It was overcast, beginning maybe 2,500, all the way up to 3,100, 3,200, a little bit variable there. And we went up and shot a couple of VORs, one of which is full procedure. Shot ILS 427, and then brought it back down with the... GPS for 1-8. Basically, we'd go in 2718, 2718, and then we came back out of the south, shot the localizer back course for 27 left at Pontiac, and it was fantastic. The vectoring was all VFR on top, not cleared as a VFR on top. We were under instrument flight rules the whole time. But then what you did, you'd come back down through the layer, pop out, go look for the runway. It was just like real instrument flying. In any case, the first one I did, I wanted to get out there and do a hold. And the hold after the approach for, I think it was the full procedure VOR for 2-7, is at a waypoint called Clio, or it's C-L-I-O-O, Clio, Clio, whatever the case may be, which is on a radio from the Flint VOR, which is on the field. And the cross radial is from Lansing, which is probably 25, 30, maybe 35 miles to the west-southwest. Anyway, the hold, as depicted on the chart, is pretty much a direct entry as you're going northwest from Flint, and you're basically holding southeast. I got cleared to hold northwest at Clio, and actually had the presence of mind to tell the controller, hey, do you want me to hold northwest, or do you want me to hold as published, which is a southwest, or excuse me, southeast holding. So here's the audio.
Actually, let's shoot something for 1-8.
Zero Tango Alpha is radar contact. Did you want to hold for a while, Clio, or just one turn?
I'd like to hold a couple, three times, if I may, and after that, sir, if it's possible to get an approach to 1-8, that would be wonderful.
VOR or GPS?
Let's go GPS.
So Zero Tango Alpha, you can expect that. You're cleared to the fire intersection via the published missed approach procedure. Climb and maintain 4,000. Hold northwest of Clio, and expect for the clearance at 1400 Zulu or earlier if you like.
For the clearance 1400, expect 4,000. Head to fly in the mist to Clio, and hold as published or hold northwest, sir.
And Cessna Zero Tango Alpha, is it southeast is the holding pattern?
Yes, sir, it appears to be that way.
So Zero Tango Alpha, you can hold southeast as published.
Thank you kindly, Zero Tango Alpha. Please be advised, bottom's 1-800 and top's about 3,000 to 3,100.
Now, I'm not beating up the controller here. The controller was probably handling six or seven aircraft at a time, a couple, three of which were doing approaches, so we had to keep some spacing for that. My whole point is I'm not normally this situationally aware, and the idea of being able to go back in question and be thinking about that hold as far ahead of time as I was just really pleased with myself. And when we departed the airspace and got switched over to Detroit approach so we could head back to Pontiac, I got this.
Cessna Zero Tango Alpha, thank you very much for all the work. Come back again. Contact Detroit approach 127.5.
127.5, thank you very kindly for the accommodation, sir. Zero Tango Alpha.
Okay, it's not a pat on the back, welcome to Oshkosh, and thanks for the help like Ken got going into Oshkosh, but that's an approach controller that clearly didn't mind having me in his airspace after shooting four approaches with a published miss and all that. So I'm feeling pretty good. Now, bear in mind, we're going to have a VFR day before too much longer here, and Steve's going to start pulling my vacuum instruments, and I'm going to be all over the place again. But for the time being, I am nailing the instrument stuff. I feel good. The rating is within reach. All I got to do is stay focused and really study for this thing. And I'll tell you what, I'm taking some inspiration from Pilot Will here, and former student Pilot Will, now Pilot Will of the Student Pilot Podlog. Will, figure out what you're going to call your next feed and get it to me so I can plug it here on the show. But in any case, I'm excited as heck. Let's talk about Michael Mancuso. This is not a rerun of the prior stuff, but I will tell you, Mike is in his 10th year doing shows. He has 7,000 hours total time and commercial and instructor certificates. He started flying gliders at age 11 and soloed for the first time when he was 13. He and his family own Mid-Island Air Service on Long Island in New York. He competed in IAC from 92 to 97 and spent 1998 through 2000 with the Northern Lights. He flies the Extra 300L. Now, that's about 23 feet long, 9 feet tall at the tail, and it's got a wingspan of about 25 feet. It's powered by a Textron Lycoming engine with about 300 horsepower. It's connected to an MT three-blade prop that pulls the aircraft through the air at 170 knots when cruising at 75% power. It'll get off the pavement in 315 feet, climb at more than 3,000 feet per minute, plus it'll pull plus or minus 10 Gs and do all kinds of crowd-pleasing gyrations between its 55-knot stall speed and VNE of 220 knots. The aircraft is built in Germany and certified in the United States. It's got two seats, and I'll explain that in just a second. I talked to Michael a few months ago, and I had him on the podcast by phone from New York just before he flew for one of his first 2007 shows. Michael was in Battle Creek again this year for the Battle Creek Balloon Festival and Field of Flight Air Show, doing both his solo performance and some absolutely stunning formation aerobics. Aerobics. Yeah, they're aerobics, you know that? With Matt Chapman. So I get the call Thursday night. Mike's available for a media ride the next day, and would sometime between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. work for me? Does a bear shit in the woods? Hell yeah! How's 7:30 sound? The aircraft has got two seats. I'm going up in the extra 300L with Mike Mancuso. All right.
Zero at Niner. Visibility 7. Clouds few 1,000. Temperature 1-9, dew point 1-7, and altimeter 3006. VOR runway 5 approaching use, landing departing runway 5. Advise control initial contact. You have information uniform. Battle Creek Tower information.
So I show up on the ramp. It is a cool day, a little bit hazy. We've got a scattered layer, about 1,000 up, maybe a little bit more than that. But all that really kind of does is punctuate the landscape. The weather is good for the ride. I get there, Michael's crew chief gets me all strapped into the front seat of the extra 300, and we make sure that the audio recorder unit is all set up so we can do audio. As we are taxiing for takeoff, we got a little bit of chatter going on. Battle Creek is an Air National Guard base that is home to a lot of A-10s, one of my favorite aircraft out there, the Warthog. I don't know why anybody thinks they're ugly. I think they're gorgeous. A close air support gun with an aircraft built around it. They're absolutely fantastic stuff. And I'll tell you what, man, I go to four or five air shows a year, and Battle Creek has got a Warthog at just about every one of them. Can't say enough about the Air National Guard base there at Battle Creek. One of the things that Michael also mentions is that, you know, he comes back to Battle Creek pretty frequently, and, you know, military fighter pilots and close air support guys and gals could be forgiven for being a little full of themselves, but they're not. Western Michigan University has its flight school on the field, and even though there are A-10s all over the place, military activities going on, we have no problem with the taxi. So let's listen to the chatter.
See a couple A-10s across the way there.
My limited experience thus far, I'm pretty much good with anything except for sustained inverted. Which I know
will come. Okay, we'll do that then.
Which I know will come as a great disappointment.
To you, because that was my whole flight was going to be upside down.
Excellent.
That would be fine.
My guess is that you got more upside down time than some of these guys have right side up.
Yeah, no doubt.
Now, those who remember the Brett Hunter episode know that it was a sustained inverted that kind of did me in as far as the motion sickness and figuring out that discretion was the better part of valor, not wanting to inadvertently get stuff on Brett's airplane. A little different here. Whereas in Brett's airplane, I was out in the open air in front. In this case, Michael and I are both under the same canopy, and that's why you won't see on the website any pictures, because pretty much you're taking a picture of the reflections from the canopy. We got some pictures from outside the aircraft, but none from inside. So I'm kind of letting Brett know that the sustained inverted doesn't work well with Captain Force's tummy. If only just to, hey, you know, it's fair warning. So anyway, we get cleared for takeoff, and we are ready to go at runway 5 for Battle Creek.
Battle Creek Tower, extra 5-4, November Lima is ready to go, runway 5.
For November Lima, Battle Creek Tower, runway 5, clear for takeoff. The Seneca departing from midfield to be northbound.
Roger, we have the Seneca in sight.
You don't spend a lot of time straight and level in a flight with Mike Mancuso. We get a few minutes away from the airport, and we're over at Gull Lake, and the aerobatics begin, which is really cool. Starting out with a roll, it's an aileron roll, and Michael's specifically does it so that there's some positive G all the way around. Got to be a great ride for media riders who haven't flown before and who are doing this thing for their first time. As a matter of fact, the guy right after me was a no-show because apparently cross communications, he thought he was getting a balloon ride. This was not a balloon ride. Then we go on to the four-point roll. So we hesitate every 90 degrees. Then, of course, the loop. Build up a little bit of speed, pull it up at about 3 G's, 0 G over the top, and then 3 G's on the pull on the way down. Then immediately into the hammerhead. As you guys remember, and this is the thing that was so dramatic with Brett, dramatic also with Michael, but in a different way, different aircraft. It was a really cool day out there. So we head vertical, and it was cold enough where the airplane just climbed like crazy. It was beautiful. So got up there, and Michael is dancing on the stick on the rudders, and just as we're getting ready to start sliding back, kicks the rudder over around on the left wingtip, and we're back down straight toward the ground and pulled it back out. Then, of course, we did the fast roll, where he basically got us around the entire 360 degrees in about a second. I think he got us through that pretty damn fast. But in any case, here is the audio from that particular series. So the next two maneuvers, the barrel roll and the avalanche. The barrel roll is basically a loop with a roll done at the same time. So the net effect is a corkscrew going horizontally in the sky. You keep a G in your seat the entire time. And I guess there are guys out there who can like pour a Coke while they're doing a barrel roll. Now, the cool thing is when you watch the formation aerobatics that Michael does with Matt Chapman, where Matt will fly along inverted and Michael will do barrel rolls in formation with the smoke going around Matt's line. It is absolutely amazing stuff. So the barrel roll, wonderfully coordinated in the whole thing. Then comes what is my second favorite maneuver of the whole flight. It was my first favorite maneuver while we were on the flight, and since on reflection, it's become my second favorite. It is the avalanche. The avalanche is the first part of a loop, and then when you're at the top of that loop, you do a series of snap rolls. Now, a snap roll is where you get rotation that is caused by a really rapid pitch change coupled with very rapid yaw. So you get a real serious imbalance in the lift between the wings, and that causes you to just to roll violently. Listen to Michael at the top of this loop when he's just getting ready to throw the snap roll. This guy loves aerobatics, and he just can't wait to spring this snap roll on you at the top of the loop. Just listen to his voice. Okay, here is what has become my favorite maneuver of the whole thing. You'll remember on the ride with Brett, we did rolls, we did a loop, we did stalls and you know, stalled type things, and then we did gyroscopic maneuvers, and those are all the elements of aerobatics, or at least, you know, all the ones that he was laying down as being, you know, the fundamentals. So, smartass that I am, after we get through with the avalanche, you know, cause I, you know, we are pretty much throwing the airplane around a lot. I go, hey, so that's a gyroscopic maneuver, huh? And he proceeds to say, no, this is gyroscopic. Whereupon Michael Mancuso throws the airplane ass over tea kettle across the sky. I can no longer tell. Yeah, I got a pretty good idea in a loop and even in the snap rolls what's going on. It's blue, it's green, it's brown. It's blue, it's green, it's brown. It's brown, it's brown, it's green, it's blue. Throws the airplane across the sky and then recovers. Listen to Michael. This is great.
That's all gyroscopic, eh? No, this is gyroscopic. We're going to go vertical. Up your left wing.
Nope.
Now look over the nose. Alrighty. That's a tumble.
Listen again to the howl in the headset. That's not an editing artifact. That's what it sounds like. Listen.
That's a tumble.
Yeah! Oh, favorite thing of 2007. Can anybody disagree? Favorite thing of 2007. The tumble. No, this is gyroscopic. Thanks, Mike. That rocks. Anyway, so we start heading back to the airport, and of course, I warn Mike. I know my tummy. My tummy doesn't like sustained inverted. But here's what happens. You know, I told Michael about the inverted thing kind of as a courtesy, because, you know, if I do happen to hurl, all I got to do is go shower someplace, but he's got to fly an airplane that smells like hurl for the next couple of days. So definitely don't want to hurl in the nice man's airplane, because, you know, he's out there giving me a meteor ride, and it's a really cool so far, and it gets, and it stays cool. This isn't even the last of it. But I'll tell you what, when he rolls me inverted, it's kind of like permission. It's like, you know, it's okay if you experience motion sickness. This is kind of like a license to hurl. You know, hey, I warned the guy on taxi. And I'll tell you what, it was kind of liberating and kind of, you know, it's if you got permission to hurl, you don't need to hurl. Long story short, this ride went real well with the tummy. I can't help but wonder that, you know, if I got 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes of this every once in a while, maybe got out in a Citabria, that the tummy would be just fine. It's a matter of just not having enough time. Other thing, I carried the air sick bag in my hand the entire time, which is, you know, a practice. I still keep an air sick bag on my kneeboard. I've never needed one, but the fact of the matter is, if it's right there at hand, it's a lot easier. You got the sick sack in your hand, you don't need to futz around. And it actually makes it so you don't need the sick sack. It's kind of cool that way. If you've got passengers that are like that, make them hold the sick sack and tell them it's not because you think they're going to hurl. It makes it so that it's not something that they've got to do a whole bunch of preparation to do. And frankly, the act of hanging onto that thing makes it a lot easier. Anyway, Captain Force's tummy was fine on this one, and that was really cool. And I actually got to thank Michael for rolling me inverted that way and kind of trusting me, frankly, not to hurl in his airplane. So anyway, next thing was the four-point roll. And if the tumble or some of the other stuff wasn't an indication of how hard these guys work when they're flying air show demonstrations for you, this did it. Same thing before. It's, you know, four-point roll, but I'll tell you what, it's like the thing was on rails. Every 90 degrees, just a slam, hard, hesitation of the airplane. I think I had, like, noggin canopy contact at a couple of points. So anyway, here's the hard four-point roll. If you've seen Blue Angel's demonstration ride footage, especially the ones that are done out west, you're familiar with the ridge crossing. The ridge crossing is where you're ingressing to an area and you're flying your FA-18 real low to the ground so as to avoid radar contact. You've got a ridge in front of you, and it's no problem really to pull to get up over the ridge, but then you want to get right back down on the other side of the ridge, but you don't want to push and send all the blood into your head as you're going back over. Now, frankly, it's a lot easier to take those G's, sitting down. So, you see in the ride the maneuver called the ridge crossing, which is where you pull up, you get on top of the ridge, you roll inverted, and then pull over the top of the ridge. Be really cool to do that somewhere in southwest Michigan, but, you know, the terrain's really kind of flat. Remember that scattered layer of clouds about 1,000 feet up? How about a ridge crossing over some of that?
These clouds are cool. May not be legal, but the clouds are too tempting, but we have to do a roll on that one, okay? That's too much fun. Cool, ridge crossing. Hey, yes.
Yeah! Now, if you had asked me at 5:30 in the morning when I got in the car if I thought I was going to get a ridge crossing out of the meteor ride, I'd have said no way. And despite Michael's comment, the cloud over which we went for this thing was translucent enough, could make out features on the other side. Not technically a cloud. We were completely legal in doing it. But I'll tell you what, when you've got a reference like that up there to do the aerobatics near, boy, is that cool. Just absolutely fantastic. So we call up Battle Creek, we head back in, and just a wonderful landing after we had an extended downwind for spacing. Michael did a carrier break to bring us back around, one of the more interesting base and final legs I've been on. But just a beautiful landing, and then taxi back into the ramp.
And ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our flight to Battle Creek International Airport. Seatbacks and tray tables. Please remain seated until the captain has shut down the airplane and open the canopy. And if you did use a barf bag, please, did you have it out?
Oh, dude, I'm much better if I got it out.
Yeah, because it's a stress thing, right?
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, no, I totally get that.
I'm just sitting here gripping it, and I was fine.
Isn't that funny how that works, though? If it's in that little bag, and you feel the least little quiver, you look at it, you're like, oh, that looks like a hard thing to get to.
So later on, the next few days, went out to the air show, got to see Michael perform, both individually and with Matt Chapman. And I will confess, you know, kind of standing there with my, you know, press pass there and, you know, talking to one of the air show attendees. Oh, yeah, that's Mike Mancuso's plane. Yeah, I was up in that a couple of days ago. Yeah, nice aircraft. He flies it well. He's going to do well. Fact of the matter is, you know, again, I am a mere pretender compared to Michael and guys and gals like him. What a fantastic ride. Consummate professional. Man, 22 minutes and just made a big chunk of my summer. Michael Mancuso, thank you very kindly for taking me up. You can reach Michael at www.mmairshows.com. His email address is nlight4, that's November Lima India Golf Hotel Tango 4 at AOL.com. And the phone number is 516-359-9948. That's 516-359-9948. Michael is actively seeking a title sponsor, probably for the remainder of this season and for next season, and tells me that it is surprisingly economical. Sponsors may not realize how efficiently they can get into a title sponsorship. And Michael flies in front of 2 million people a year. It's the kind of advertising that in other circumstances would go for $500,000. So the sponsorship is eminently reasonable, and if you are interested in sponsoring Michael Mancuso and the extra 300L, and frankly getting the kind of attention that Michael's getting on this podcast because he reaches out to the media like that, by all means contact Michael Mancuso and talk about sponsorship opportunities. For Airspeed, I'm Stephen Force. NetVace provides a lot of the technical resources that we need to put out this this show. You can reach them at www.netvoce.com. You can reach us at steve@airspeedonline.com. You can also see the website at www.airspeedonline.com. Other interesting stuff coming up that as soon as things happen, I can announce it here on the podcast, but interesting stuff coming up. Also, if you want an email reminder when we put out a new episode of the podcast, send me an email, steve@airspeedonline.com. A big shout out to Ron of the Apple Air Force, also to Dan and to Eric. For Airspeed, I'm Stephen Force. Thanks for joining us.